Wow, I just felt owned. That was bam. CITR 101.9 FM Ink Studs. This is the radio show where we talk about what? Comics. Today's special guest is Mr. Tom Neely. Tom is the author of The Blot, a wonderful self-published graphic novel that put out last year, as well as some other endeavors. Do I have you there, Tom?
Yeah. Hey, how's
Excellent.
It going?
Good. So, what just owned me? What did we just play?
Oh, that was Wolves in the Throne Room. They're a black metal band from, I think, near Olympia, Washington. I figured that would scare everybody away so that I wouldn't have to worry about anyone listening to me blather on about myself. So,
well, I gotta say, it's the first time anything that heavy's been played here. So,
all right.
You know, that's good. It's, you know, dice it up. It's a change from the normal comic tradition of playing something from Robert Crumb's collection. But I think we held something like that a little later. So, The Blot. First, let's go get into who is Tom Neely, because The Blot's not your first thing, but it's your most recognizable
right.
piece of work. So, right. Who are you, yeah. Tom?
I'm sorry?
Who are you?
Who am I? Well, let's see. This is my The Blot is my first graphic novel, but it's been out. It's actually 1 year old now. I've been doing, you know, some comics here and there, mini comics and stuff for the past 8 years or so. I kind of started doing my first comics while I was studying painting in grad school at San Francisco Art Institute. Did my first self-published thing as part of my thesis there, and started going to conventions and learned there was this whole other world of people making their own comics, and kind of got sucked into it, and here I am now. But
the meat grinder that is the comics industry.
Yep.
So, what started The Blot?
What started it?
Yeah.
It actually started as a series of paintings that I was doing. I started around, I think, about 2003 or 2004. I started doing these paintings with this with the character, the central figure from the book. And I wasn't really that happy with them. They were more or less kind of like figurative studies and like you know, just sort of like little narrative scenes. And I was kind of bored with them, so I had this idea of trying to just drop ink on them, you know, like Jackson Pollock style, as sort of adding an abstract element to kind of break me out of like what felt very stiff and rigid in my drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started doing that. I would do a finished painting and then lay it on the floor and just start dropping ink on it and see what happens. And after doing a few of those, it started to kind of take on a life of its own, where the ink started to, you know, represent more, not just an abstract form element, you know, destroying the painting, but started to kind of like take on this idea that it might be an entity in the narrative of the series of paintings that I was working on. And I worked on those for about a year. I did about 20 of those paintings, and those kind of, a few of those, like three or four of them, kind of inspired me to write a short story based on the paintings in comic form, and that became the first chapter of the book. And then I put that out as a mini comic, and I had ideas that it would, that maybe I'd do more stories based on other paintings, and it might be like a series, eventually a series of short stories all about, you know, blots and whatever else comes up in the paintings. But as I was working on that, I started to kind of like see more of a connection between all the different stories, and kind of strung it together with a little bit of sort of a story of a doomed relationship that was semi-autobiographical. And then it just all kind of turned into one piece of one full novel instead of a collection of stories. So it's kind of basic way we ended up where we were. So.
A neat thing about the blot is you kind of get this feeling that it's like this ominous, dooming presence.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't stay in that concept.
Right.
It seems to be constantly evolving and changing on different ideas.
Yeah, I wanted it to be kind of ambiguous that it could kind of represent anything. It kind of introduces itself as like this threatening force, that, but by the end of the book, it's kind of become a part of the central character, and he's kind of, I guess, for lack of a better term, learned how to use it wisely, I guess. But within the book, there's a lot of, you know, I like the idea of using it ambiguously so it can be interpreted any way that the reader wants to see it. And I've heard a lot of different interpretations in the last year that have been pretty good. So,
well, also seems like each time I take a look at it, I get a different idea from it too.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first time I looked at it, I was like, this seems like really visceral and this violent thing that just kind of takes over. But it just seems so in tune with the characters too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yourself published it. Why the choice not to distribute with Diamond?
Two parts. One, I don't really like the idea that there's one monopolistic distributor for most of the comics industry, and that kind of annoys me on an ethical level.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I'm too lazy to wrap the belly bands around 500 books at once and ship them all off. Because I, you know, every book that I order, I have to wrap the belly band around each individual one, and then wrap that up and ship it off. So, in order for those belly bands to go out intact and not ripped up as you find them in the stores, usually,
mm-hmm.
I have to do it all individually. So that's part of it. But in a larger sense, I'm kind of I've always been more interested in pursuing alternative methods of doing things rather than just going with the, you know, the normal big corporate entity that is soon swallowing up the whole rest of the earth. So it's just, you know, I'd rather kind of pursue, I'd rather take the chance of doing it on my own than become a part of that machine, in a sense. So I kind of, you know, look to people like Ian MacKay as kind of a business model, and or Dylan Williams, who I think also looks at Ian MacKay, Dylan of Spark Plug Comic Books.
Only he charges more than $5 for things.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just kind of a different way of looking at the industry and not looking at it as, you know, just a means of becoming a big star and mm-hmm. and selling all your books, but trying to, you know, do it in another way.
Well, I think it's quite commendable because I find the step into Diamond, it just takes away a certain amount of spirit. I don't know. There'll be people listening going, why are you complaining about Diamond? But I think, you know, I'd rather order stuff through Last Gasp.
Yeah.
And,
I do have my books at Last Gasp, and they're cool. They've been good to me so far. And you know, like some other people like Spark Plug and Bodega mm-hmm. both helped me distribute a bit. And Tony Shenton has been a big help in getting me into some stores that I've never even heard of. So I just like that. You know, that another thing that kind of bugs me about Diamond is, and I don't want to say too much bad about them because you never know, I may end up needing them someday. But I've heard so many stories of them rejecting books for a number of reasons, and it's not that I necessarily worry that mine would be rejected, but I don't like that, you know, you have this monopolistic distributor that then also refuses to carry a lot of stuff that mm-hmm. I think is great books, you know.
They
a
also,
lot of books by my friends that get rejected, and I don't like that. So
there's also the markup, too.
Mm-hmm.
So for those wondering, not Diamond being a bigger distributor, it takes a larger chunk of the cut before it,
right.
you know, stores get a discount. Diamond gets a discount. They take a big discount. So basically, the amount you'd have to charge for a book to get a substantial to break even is quite unruly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that cuts out a lot of potential customers, you know, people that want to buy stuff, you know.
Potential.
If your book's too expensive, they're less likely to get it. And I'd rather have my book in the hands of the few that are going to truly appreciate it than to have it, you know, overpriced or in stores where it's not going to sell and end up in a dollar bin somewhere, you know. I'd rather
get it
to people individually or get it to stores on my own in through alternative methods. So
now,
I mean, it is indie comics for... we should be pursuing independent methods of distribution, so...
One day.
Yeah.
I remember when it all went to crap and it was not a good day. Influences. What are some of your comic book influences and art influences?
Man.
One that I'm just going to toss out there that seems...
I'm sorry.
One that kind of sticks out to me is Fleischer's.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Well, I actually, my day job is to do a lot of freelance animation for Disney and stuff. And so I've studied a lot of animation, and the stuff I've always liked the most is the Fleischer stuff, definitely the Popeyes and Betty Boops. And but beyond that, you know, pretty much anything of the 20s and 30s black and white era of cartoons when everything was completely surreal and there were, you know, it was all these artists like truly exploring this new medium of cartoons. I think that was kind of the heyday of like the most experimental and interesting things happening within like the context of a, you know, still a commercial cartoon. So I find that era very interesting. And that kind of, I mean, my love of those cartoons from early on kind of led me to things like EC Cigars, Popeye Strips, and stuff like that. So I kind of got into those through the animation. And but other influences, I mean, early on, the first comic books I ever read were Floyd Gottfredson's Mickey Mouse comics that my grandmother gave me for Christmas, and some of the Carl Barks and stuff. And I also had the same grandmother gave me a copy of that Smithsonian Book of Comic Book Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And
the biblical tome.
Still have that next to my my desk all the time. So it's that book, I think probably the whole alternative comic scene owes a lot to Bill Blackbeard, because it seems like all of us fetishized that book a bit.
Yeah.
So
Dylan.
But, so that was some of the early stuff I was into, but also in painting, when I got a little older, I always wanted to do comics when I was young, but most of what I could find were superhero comics, so I always read that. But then as I got a little older in high school, I got more interested in painting and was interested in, like, really latched onto, like, the surrealists, especially René Magritte, and did a lot of that in school, trying to do, like, surrealism and stuff like that, and I think that's still been a carryover of influence to this day. But I've been through so many different phases. In grad school, I was trying to be like a Robert Rauschenberg or a Jean-Michel Basquiat painter, style painter. But I kind of felt I got lost interest in that, and I was reading a biography of Philip Guston and reading about how he shifted from very successful as an abstract expressionist, and then at some point he just realized, I don't want to do this, I want to do figurative paintings, and he started doing paintings that were inspired by comic strips that he liked as a kid, like George Harriman and Bud Fisher and Barney Google, Billy DeBeck stuff, and through him I kind of realized that comics are more of what I'd always wanted to be doing as well, and it also introduced me to those artists as well. So that's when I was in grad school, and I started, at that point I just shifted and started doing paintings that were essentially like one-panel comic strips with all these characters. And so I kind of graduated with a Master of Fine Arts in painting by doing comic strips in oil paint. So,
just an aside note for folks in Vancouver, you can actually see some original Philip Guston at the Vancouver Art Gallery right now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, for a show that's in town. I'm going to take a quick song break.
Okay.
Because we're about that time, and every song you requested, there seems more purpose behind it, so I want to make sure we get a chance to play it all. So I'm going to play the second track, and then I want to get more into talking about the painting.
Okay.
So, CITR 101.9 FM, this is Inkstuds with our special guest, Tom Neely. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
CITR 101.9 FM Inkstuds. Tell us about the song, Tom.
Now that everybody's turned the radio off.
Could have been worse.
That was me. I recorded an album last year as part of an art show. I had a solo art show at a gallery here in Los Angeles last September. And I just decided I'd try to record a soundtrack for the show. And just recorded about six songs, although a couple of them were, one of them was like 25 minutes long or something like that. And so it ended up being a full album. And I don't know, that's that. That was the first track. It was called Broken. It's sort of about, it kind of, I guess, the unofficial soundtrack to The Blot, I guess, because it was kind of inspired a bit by some of the similar ideas.
I was going through while listening to that on your website, iwilldestroyyou.com. Mm-hmm. Everyone go check it out now. And looking at the art on it, and it does really meld itself well.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. It's kind of, I guess, that same sense of, I guess, confusion, throwing it together. So.
Yeah, it's just, well, and kind of taking some old elements like, you know, banjo or something, and then kind of mixing it and turning it into something abstract and more now, I guess. I don't know how now my music is, but it's just mainly just me trying to experiment with making music. I used to do that a long time ago. I was in a couple of bands in high school and stuff, and I've always played guitar and taught myself banjo a few years ago, and so, but it's just kind of an excuse for me to be, the whole focus of the show was to try and be as self-indulgent as I could, and so I figured why not record an experimental noise album to go along with it. So.
Well, it kind of reminds me of Nurse with Wound a bit.
Yeah, you know, that's a band I've always heard batted around in the company of bands I like, and I've still yet to hear them, so I should.
Check it out. Steve Stapleton, and it's some fantastic stuff. I've been listening to his stuff for years. His latest album, my friend played it the other night, and it's quite maddening and wonderful. It's weird pop elements thrown in with some super experimental stuff.
That's cool.
So back to The Blot and the art show and whatnot. Any plans to continue the character, or is it just kind of going to stay?
You know, I always, you know, when I was in the middle of working on it, it kind of felt like something that would just keep going on and on and on. But then once the book was done, it kind of felt like that was kind of a finality to it. And, you know, I've kind of used the character in a few more paintings since then, or evolved him into other things. For instance, in that the show I had was after The Blot came out, I kind of turned him into a werewolf for a series of paintings. And but now I kind of reached a point where I'm not feeling like he's. It's become too much of a thing. Like I don't know how to say it, but I feel like it's time to move on, basically, and try something new and different, and explore some new territory. So that's what I've been, you know, just recently kind of coming to figure out what it is I'm going to do. I've got all these ideas running around my heads now. So I guess The Blot and the characters from The Blot are probably done for now, but who knows? Maybe I'll revisit them someday.
I was just noticing little light stuff is you like to take pictures with, since you're at all these comic conventions, of your book with.
Oh yeah. I like to take
the cosplayers.
Yeah. Anytime somebody's in a costume, I try to get them to pose with my book. So, I've gotten some pretty good ones so far. The best was, at San Diego Comic-Con last year, I got Rorschach to pose with it, so seemed kind of appropriate.
Any particular stories of oddities?
No, well, there were a couple of people in at Emerald City Con in Seattle. That's the only convention where I've gotten attitude from the people with in costumes. Like, one guy was like, "Well, what are you going to pay me to endorse your product?" And I was like, "No, you're just a dude in a costume." I expect you want people to take your picture, but whatever. So, but everybody else, most people in costumes are like, "Oh yeah, sure, this will be fun." But yeah, for some reason, Seattle people gave me some attitude about it.
Ah, Seattle people, cheer up!
Yeah,
they're just costumes.
If you're a 60-year-old man dressed like Magneto, you have no right to give me attitude. I'm sorry.
Unless you're Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
Then it's just expected. So one thing you have coming out, I guess, in a couple of weeks is the Melvins.
Yeah. Yeah, that was. I'm really excited about this. I did a book. It's a 22-page comic book for a limited edition box set that the Melvins are putting out. It's a vinyl version of their last album, A Senile Animal, being put out by Hydrahead Records. So, after the Blot came out, I became friends with Aaron Turner, who's one of the heads of Hydrahead Records, and he's also in the band Isis, who I actually listened to a lot while making the Blot, so I was really excited to meet him. And we've become friends, and we've done a couple of projects together, and he asked me to do this book because they were trying to figure out things to throw in the box set to make it kind of unique, because a lot of Melvins fans are obsessive Melvins collectors, because Melvins have always put out pretty cool collector's items things in the model of Kiss, so I guess I'm the next Melvin's collector's item, hopefully, if people like it. But yeah, just finished drawing it 2 weeks ago, and we're probably sending it to the printers tomorrow, so I will hopefully have it at San Diego Comic-Con next month.
So you'll be able to sell it to folks as well as those getting...
Yeah, they're doing a limited edition in the box set. There's going to be 300 copies of the box set, but they're printing extras that I'll have for sale at conventions. And, yeah, so that's that. So you can either get it through the box set or from me. So.
It's quite a sad comic.
A what?
A sad comic.
Sad?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see it as sad at all.
I found it kind of violent and sad.
Yeah, it's pretty violent. Yeah. But I kind of thought the whole thing was pretty funny. I don't know.
It definitely...
My sense of humor tends to be a bit skewed, though.
Well, it felt like, you know, Melvins-y to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to really just go with their kind of surreal approach to songwriting and just go with that. So they didn't give me any guidelines or anything. They just said, do it. And at one point I was trying to get the lyrics from them to use as dialogue. And the response that came back from Buzz was, I've never written them down, so no. And so then I just, the bits of dialogue that are in the book are what I think the lyrics are from listening to the songs, but I could have gotten some of them totally wrong, so, which I think is kind of fun that way, so just kind of adds to it. But I basically just took all the song titles and kind of turned them all into characters. Like there's a song called The Blood Witch and a song called A Talking Horse and The Civilized Worm and Mechanical Bride, and so all of those characters kind of make an appearance in it, but otherwise I just had free reign to just write a weird, surreal story to go along with it. So it was a lot of fun. It was a nice side project to kind of, while trying to figure out what, because I'm in the process of writing my next book, and it was a nice distraction to get me back into comics and do something different that's a little bit outside of my own head for a little while.
Little piece of useless knowledge for today. My first concert was the Melvins.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
16-year-old me at the Commodore Ballroom before it got yuppified, which is this wonderful venue in Vancouver. It was super trashy, and it was a wonderful show.
My first concert was Cinderella opening for Bon Jovi.
Oh.
When I was, I think I was 11 or 12, so 3-1 wet tour.
Did you stick around for the Jove?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Well, let's play the Melvin song, and then we'll talk a little bit about what you got coming up and
okay.
a couple other things. So, what's the Melvin song we're about to play?
This is The Blood Witch, which is, I think, the second track on the album.
So. Okay. We'll be right back. Inkstead, CITR, 101.9 FM. Does that song just cut out?
Oh.
I'm like,
weird.
Hey, there's no sound. And there's still no sound. Like, I could see it being, you know.
MP3 malfunction or something.
We had a stereo malfunction. Inkstead, CITR 101.9 FM. That was a snippet of the Melvins. Yeah, it's still going. No sound.
Weird.
No sound.
This oh, well.
C'est la vie. What can we do? So what do you have working on in the future?
Well, it's right now I actually just finished writing the kind of outline for my next book. And I'm kind of in the beginning phases of starting to draw it or do like the first rough draft of it. And so that's, I don't know, it's very, I'm really excited about it now that I've, like, got the whole thing kind of figured out. Because my writing process is kind of, it can be kind of, I mean, it's very stream of conscious, but kind of complicated, and, like, a lot of different ideas will happen, and then it's kind of, like, trying to piece it all together like a puzzle and figure out how it's all going to work. I just figured out that puzzle this week, so I'm excited about that. But it's gonna be pretty different. I think stylistically, I mean, the drawing style is gonna be different than the blot, and the story is actually really dark, a lot darker than I thought it would be. So
you need to cheer up, buddy.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm actually a pretty much just a goofball around home. I'm pretty funny, but when it comes to writing or making art, it all comes out very bleak and sad or whatever. I don't know. But
what do you think that is? Like, is it a personal, like, you just telling the story you want and kind of letting out a personal darkness?
I don't know. I think it's just kind of, I don't know. Yeah, part of that, just exploring some, you know, trying to dig around and look for other ideas that are a bit darker or a little bit things that you're kind of not necessarily afraid to, I mean, things that you're afraid to reveal about yourself sometimes. I mean, art that I really like are things that take risks and try to, yeah, I don't like things that are safe, you know, so I really try to push myself to go down roads that are a little bit, that make me nervous, you know, so the fact that the book that I just finished writing feels really dark, and that actually makes me nervous that people are going to think that I've gone off the deep end. That makes me feel like, that excites me, that makes me feel like I did something that might be good. So, I mean, I just kind of, I think in most art and music and comics and things that I'm usually drawn to are things that kind of go to, that do push that envelope of revealing a bit of the artist that you don't normally see. So, yeah,
it's,
I don't
that,
know.
That personal...
It's like, kind of, you know, I did, trying to do the same thing with my art show last year was I did, you know, a lot of semi-pornographic werewolf paintings that are kind of scary and violent and sexually explicit. Was just kind of trying to force myself to do something, you know, that wasn't necessarily the, you know, happy, fun thing that everybody wants to hang on their wall. I wanted to do something that was a little bit, I don't know, it's not like a shock value kind of approach, but it's more like just trying to do something real and a little bit different.
And that's, you know, the what you want.
Yeah.
That's what's real to you.
Yeah. So, and I don't know, it could be a product of, like, a lot of the stuff I, you know, like, I've been reading a lot of Cormac McCarthy this year, and I've always been kind of, like, when I was very young, my dad was a English literature professor, and he, you know, when I was, like, 12 or 13, he gave me my first Camus novel, Albert Camus, and kind of sent me down that road, I guess.
That's pretty young.
Yeah. He gave me The Plague and The Stranger when I was, like, in junior high, which is, you know, in junior high is, like, kind of your most depressing years anyway, so it was kind of started me off on the right track, I guess.
Well, that kind of makes sense, reading a lot of different kind of literature, because it seems like you're really trying to experiment and play with the storytelling to kind of avoid standard storytelling techniques.
Right. Yeah, but with but I also want to, you know, yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
My brain just stopped working there for a second. but yeah, I agree.
All right. Are there any particular authors that you've enjoyed?
Oh, I don't know. The ones that I just mentioned, I've also been trying to read more. I was reading The Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick right now. And I just got a book that I'm kind of excited about that I don't know much about, but it's called I Spit on Your Graves by French author Boris Vian. And it's supposed to be kind of a pretty bleak and violent take on a noir-type story. So, I don't know, but I've always got a stack of books that I'm trying to dig through.
Voraciously.
When I was working on The Blot, I became obsessed with Moby Dick and read it like four times within 2 years. And
wow.
So...
That's, you know, a testament.
Whatever is around. I'm just always looking for new things to read. So,
one of I was kind of looking through my stacks of anthologies to see what else you have. I think the only thing I found that I had by you in what I looked through was in an SPX anthology.
Oh, yeah.
The Journey story.
Way back.
Is that one of your earlier comic pieces?
Yeah. When I was... I did that, yeah, that was 2003, I think, and some of my earlier comics were a lot more obviously influenced by, like, Fleischer or Disney cartoons, and I did a series for a while called One Fine Day that was a comic book attempt at kind of recreating a silent movie style cartoon with, like, the main character is the same monkey character from that SPX story, who was kind of inspired by Bosco and Mickey Mouse and stuff like that. So, but I don't know. I was doing that for a while, but I really kind of felt like I never really felt that connected to that story or never really felt like I was doing much. It was just kind of more of a, just kind of playing around with an idea that I wasn't that into at the time. So I eventually kind of gave up after 3 issues of that story, and that's when I kind of feel like I found my voice in comics, in doing, that's when I started doing the blot stuff, the paintings and stuff. So kind of felt like I went through a phase of kind of learning, and at that time too I was working at the Disney Studios, so I think I was very influenced by my surroundings and what I was doing there working in animation. And and then I left Disney and started pursuing my own thing and kind of refound what I wanted to do as an artist rather than what it, I don't know.
What kind of stuff were you doing in animation?
I mainly just did stuff. I did a lot of stuff, flash animation for online, like web cartoons and games and stuff. And I still do that stuff now, freelance. I do a lot of 30-second animated clips of Disney characters for Japanese cell phones is like my main moneymaker right now. So a lot of Winnie the Pooh telling you that you've got voicemail, and Mickey Mouse telling you Happy New Year, whatever. You know, random little 30-second animated clips that are very popular in Japan, apparently. So I do that all day, and then I go and write these bleak,
filthy comics,
sad stories at night.
Is that a cleanse?
I guess so, yeah.
Because I was just wondering, you know, because you're very adamant about not distributing through Diamond, but at the same time, you work for Disney.
Yeah, well, and at the same time, I'm hoping that I'll eventually get away from that. So, but I've been thinking about lately maybe going back into teaching, which I did about 10 years ago, so maybe.
What kind of teaching is that?
Teaching art or something. Oh, okay. Art or illustration or something. So,
well, you said you have your master's, right?
Yeah. So who knows? But yeah, I really love Disney, well, the old Disney stuff, so that's what kind of drew me to it originally. Plus, I didn't, being right out of art school, I didn't want to just go work at an art supply store, so I had some friends at Disney, and they got me a job there.
I think Mark Kalasniko, he was, as a kid, very much into the Disney animation.
Yeah.
That just drew him to working for Disney, even though Vancouver, he's a BC guy, but Vancouver has a voluminous animation industry. He went down just to work for Disney.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I didn't know he was into that, too. So.
Yeah.
There's a lot of...
He doesn't do it anymore because doesn't have the technology knowledge, but yeah. I mean, he's an incredible illustrator.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend people check out his work, as well as The Blot by our guest today, Tom Neely. And please check out the website, iwilldestroyyou.com.
Yep.
And you got some other stuff on the site for people to check out if they like art, some prints and whatnot.
Yeah, I've got a lot of my recent paintings are on there, and then there's some prints, and there's a vinyl, the record of the album I put out. It's only available on vinyl. Are all on my site, and it's pretty much the only place you can get that stuff, so other than the few stores that have my books. So
I think,
so yeah, go check it out.
For folks in Vancouver, I'm pretty sure Lucky's is your only option for finding it here.
Cool.
If they have copies still. I know he had copies before, and I think he's planning on getting more, so that's the best option. So it'll be a while, I guess, till your next thing. Nothing in anthologies coming out?
No. Just the Melvin's book. It'll be out this summer, and then, I don't know, who knows how fast it'll take. I'll get this next book done, maybe next year sometime. Once I have the stories worked out, I tend to work pretty quick, so we'll see. Maybe next summer I'll have my next book, which has the working title, The Devil, right now, so.
There we go.
We'll see.
And tell me about the song I'm going to end the show off with.
Oh, yeah. Actually, the book that I just wrote, it kind of started off, I was always interested in maybe doing a biographical comic about Doc Boggs, this old blues banjo player. And that, as I researched that, I found there wasn't a whole lot to find on him, but the story just kind of evolved from that. So the book that I'm writing now, its initial spark of inspiration came from Doc Boggs, but it turned into something completely different. So I figured I'd play my favorite Doc Boggs song, Pretty Polly.
Pretty Polly. There we go. Well, thanks for coming and joining us today, Tom.
Yeah, thank you.
And I look forward to more work by you.
All right.
Okay.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Talk to you later. Bye. Tom Neely, his book is The Blot. Like I said before, check out website, iwilldestroyyou.com. Spell how it sounds. And a couple things coming up on the Ink Studs. I thought I'd take a couple moments to let people know what's going on. Next month, I'm doing a focus on Canadian cartoonists. July 4th is Canada Day. So it's a chance to... You know, I did the month on women in comics, and there's a lot of really talented Canadian folks. So I'm hoping to have some enjoyable interviews next week. I will have an interview with Ray Fenwick, which I actually did earlier today, and I think you're all really going to enjoy it. It's quite good, quite interesting. And then the week after that will be David Collier. David Collier is one of the more influential older Canadian cartoonists. I don't want to say older because he's not old, but, you know, 1980s, he was in Weirdo. Now he's published by Drawn and Quarterly. You can find four books of his by Drawn and Quarterly. I think the most recent is the Fritzy Papers. Just the Facts is a great collection. That's the one I suggest checking out. It's kind of, you know, nonfiction comics, right up the alley of what Colin Upton loves. And I'm really excited about that. I think David's pretty important as far as Canadian cartoonists go. The week after that is going to be local Vancouverite young lady Camila DiRico, and we're going to talk about her work and her moving into the world of fine art because people like her paintings. And after that, I'm trying to remember, Scott Chandler will be joining us to discuss his book, The Northwest Passage, a neat book from Oni about fur hunting. Who doesn't love fur hunting? Well, it's, you know, what Canada was started on back in the 18th century, so it's actually quite interesting. It's not a nonfiction comic, it's a fiction comic based on some rough facts, and it's really enjoyable. It's a fun read. And we'll have some other stuff. Mark Bell, as well as Chris von Zombathy, whose book is out from Drawn Quarterly, and it's quite nice. Don't forget, at the end of August, there'll be Vancouver Comic Con. We'll be at the Vancouver Library of Comics and Stories, which will feature three special guests, Jesse Hamm, Derek Kirk Kim, and one of my personal faves, Kim Deitch, will be in town. And on August 23rd, Kim will be part of a night I'm hosting at the gallery. I'm tentatively calling it A Night with Deitch, and we're going to be showing classical animation. A lot of the stuff that Tom was mentioning earlier, that kind of stuff, the Fleischers, we'll be showing some Terrytoon stuff, all this beautiful stuff from the 1920s. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And what else we got going on? Oh, and on July 6th, Vancouver Comic Con, as always, at the Heritage Hall. Camila will actually be the headlining guest, so you can come and meet her if you're in Vancouver. And there's one other thing I was going to say. My memory is like a sieve. Thanks for listening, y'all. Crimes and Treasons is up next.
I used to be a rambler, I stayed around in town. I courted Pretty Polly, and the beauty's never been found. Pretty Polly, oh, yonder she stands. Oh, where is Pretty Polly, oh, yonder she stands. With rings on her fingers and lily white hands. Pretty Polly, come take a walk with me. Pretty Polly, come take a walk with me. When we get married, some pleasure to see. hills and valleys so deep. He led her over hills and valleys so deep. At last, Pretty Polly, she began to weep. Oh, Willie, oh, Willie, I'm afraid of your way. Willie, oh, Willie, I'm afraid of your way. Oh, mind it to ramble and lead me astray. Pretty Polly, you guessing about right. Pretty Polly, Pretty Polly, you guessing about right. I dug on your grave two thirds of last night. They wound up his father, and what did they spy? Wound up his father, and what did they spy? Ain't you dug grave and a feline by? She threw her arms around him and began for to weep. At length, Pretty Polly, she fell asleep. He threw the dirt over and turned away to go. Threw the dirt over her and turned away to go. Down to the river where the deep water flows.
Here we are. Once again,